Welcome, welcome. Glad you're here. If you are new, my name's Doug. I'm one of the pastors. I'm so glad all of you are here today. Just to catch you up, we have been walking through for a long time a series in the Gospel of Luke, a book of Luke in the New Testament. We're calling the series Luke, Jesus for Everyone, because this is what we keep finding all throughout the book of Luke, that Jesus is for the wanderers, for the worn out, and for the people that get overlooked. And we're in Luke 15 now this week, and we are looking at what we are calling lost and found stories. Lost and found stories, because there are just these beautiful stories that we're going to be looking at. We started last week, but I want to ask you a few questions just to start with. Because they connect with these stories. The first question is this: have you ever wandered and wondered how to get back home? You ever wandered and kind of gotten lost? Well, there's a story in here for you. Or have you someone, next question, have you ever felt unseen or unheard, like you just kind of fell through the cracks? Well, if that's you, there is a story here that we're going to look at today that also is for you. And then this is a little bit of a tweak on it. This question is for those of us who've been in church maybe a long, long time. Maybe it's a harder question. Have you ever struggled to celebrate when grace found someone that you didn't expect? You ever struggled to celebrate when somebody found Jesus or grace found them and you went, whoa, whoa, what, them? Well, we're going to look at that today. And actually, we're going to look at how that relates to one of the great questions that Jesus answers in Luke 15. The question is this: what kind of God is God? See, because not just in Luke 15, all through the teaching of Jesus, we see through his life, through his teaching, through his death and resurrection, we see the kind of God that we could never have imagined before Jesus came, because our imaginations were very limited. So God sent Jesus to show us what the Father is like. And Jesus, friends, Jesus shows us a better God than we ever imagined. So good that it can almost feel too good to be true. And that's where we're heading today here, week two of our Lost and Found series. So if you've got your Bible, you can feel free to open it to Luke 15. I'll start in verse 1. We'll have it on the screen as well, and I'll start reading. Now the tax collectors and sinners were all gathering around to hear Jesus, but the Pharisees, so think religious experts, the Pharisees and the teachers of the law muttered, big word, muttered, important word, this man welcomes sinners and eats with them. Now just pause here. See, the Pharisees thought they knew what God was like, but they were way off base. And so then, verse 3, Jesus told them this parable. And I won't reread it because we covered this one last week. And I am going to touch on it again this week. But he tells this story that we covered last week about the lost sheep and talks about how God is like a shepherd who goes searching until he finds the lost sheep, puts it on his shoulders, and carries it home. And what's kind of funny, last week after service, the parents of two of our teens, we were out in the lobby, and they showed me this great picture of their kid. Let's put that on the screen. Isn't that fun? How old is he now? He's 18 now, so he wasn't here this morning, or mom and dad would have been in so much trouble. We did not get permission for this. We just did it. He's a preacher's kid. This is Leland and Ashley's son. This is Lincoln. How old is he here? 6, 7 years old. So that is fun, right? That is a fun one. Now I'm going to touch again on the lost sheep briefly in a moment, but moving on from that, Jesus actually takes these stories and he stacks them because each one builds on the last. So the next story, verse 8, where suppose a woman has 10 silver coins and loses one, does she not light a lamp, sweep the house, and search carefully until she finds it? And when she finds it, she calls her friends and neighbors together and says, rejoice with me, I found my lost coin. In the same way, I tell you, there is rejoicing in the presence of the angels of God over one sinner who repents. And then verse 11, Jesus continued, there was a man who had two sons. And many of you maybe have heard that last one. It's often affectionately called the parable of the prodigal son will get there soon. But what happens is, I just know a lot of times we kind of skip these first two parables because we want to get to that home run hitter, you know, the prodigal story. But today we are going to linger with the sheep. Next slide. We're going to linger with the sheep, and we're going to look at the lost coin. Go ahead, next slide. Because together they reveal a clearer picture of the heart of God. So we're going to look at these other two stories that help us to see what kind of God is. Now, it's interesting because if you read through all the parables, and it's wonderful, like read this to your kids or your grandkids. It's wonderful. They kind of can sound like cute little bedtime stories because, hey, there's a lamb that got lost and a coin that got lost and then this rebellious kid got lost. Could be read as a bedtime story for children, and that's fine. That's appropriate. But here's the deal. It's not just that because there's more going on. In fact, if we look at the life of Jesus at this point in his story, a storm is brewing. Tensions are rising. Suspicions are growing about Jesus. And instead of playing nice so he could pacify his critics, Jesus, right in front of both this group of Pharisees, the religious elite, and in front of the sinners, Jesus tells the stories in Luke 15. Same room, same audience, very different people. So this actually makes things more tense, not less, because these aren't just bedtime stories. They are challenging, subversive stories. Jesus here explains why it is that he does what he does. I mean, if you just look back at verse 1 again, just to reset the stage, the tax collectors, verse 1, the tax collectors and sinners gathered around to hear Jesus. The Pharisees and the teachers of the law, so the religious elite, they muttered, "This man welcomes sinners, and he eats with them." Now, we already know, because we've been working our way through the book of Luke, that Jesus has this reputation already. He welcomes the wrong people. He eats with them. He treats them with kindness. He treats them like family. And he does all that before they get their act together, before they're cleaned up. Jesus is loving them that way. See, back in that day, in that culture, to have a meal with somebody known as kind of table fellowship, table fellowship meant acceptance. And so the Pharisees see Jesus doing what he's doing, and they go, well, if Jesus really was from God, he would know to keep his distance. But see, Jesus is building a new kind of family where outsiders are brought in. And that infuriates this religious crowd because they had spent years building walls to keep those people on the outside. But Jesus comes and starts tearing those walls down. So what kind of God is God? Well, the Pharisees didn't get it. So Jesus shows up, but to make it really clear, especially in this chapter, God is the kind of God who cares about lost sheep, lost coins, and lost kids. And really what's happening here, the piercing question that Jesus is directing toward these religious elite in these stories, here's the piercing question under all of it. Guys, if God cares so deeply about the lost, then why don't you? I could even hear, kind of reading between the lines, Jesus saying to them, in essence, I understand, guys. I understand why you're mad, why you're angry, why you're grumbling and murmuring and confused, but I'm confused too as to why you don't receive and welcome sinners. And while that isn't specifically written out in the text, I think it's hidden in plain sight for those who have eyes to see and ears to hear. Because Luke 15 is about lost sheep and lost coins and lost sons, but it's also about lost Pharisees, religious people who somehow can't see their own desperate need for God's grace. Lost Pharisees. So Jesus says, verse 4, suppose one of you has 100 sheep. And again, remember, he's aiming this question right at the religious elite. Which one of you wouldn't go after the one that gets lost? Like, right? I mean, who wouldn't do that? Wouldn't anyone do that? So at one level, Jesus, he's explaining himself, why he eats with sinners and tax collectors, because he's saying, guys, listen, they are like lost sheep, and who wouldn't go after lost sheep? What man among you wouldn't do such a thing? And don't you kind of wish that, you know, the scribes and Pharisees would have said, oh, Jesus, okay, now that you explain it that way, that now it makes total sense. Now we understand why you befriend and, you know, eat with these outsiders. But that didn't happen. And Jesus right here, he's actually kind of a rabbinic tool. Rabbis use these kind of tools. One of them is this, sarcasm. He's being sarcastic because he's confronting them. Even in using the imagery of a shepherd is a confrontation to these religious elite, because shepherds were despised in that culture. Kenneth Bailey, who's a great scholar on the parables especially, he points out that if you had any sheep back in that day, most people had 3 sheep, maybe 4 or 5 at the most. So story here says 100 sheep? Like if you had 100 sheep, you are really wealthy. And if you're wealthy, there's no way you'd go out yourself to look for 1 stray sheep. I mean, if you even cared at all, you'd send a servant, somebody who is thought of as a low-class laborer, to get out there and do the dirty work. You'd never see a dignified Pharisee in their fine robes traipsing through the mud after 1 dumb, stubborn sheep. Why? Well, because to them, 1 sheep didn't matter. So when Jesus asks the question, so who of you wouldn't go looking? The Pharisees all know the answer. They're looking at each other. Well, you know, no, none of us, none. Not one of us would go. And so they hear this insult, and it makes them angrier. Again, somebody probably needed to get Jesus a copy of How to Win Friends and Influence People. Like, might have helped. Now, verse 5, Jesus adds this, and when the shepherd finds the sheep, he lays it on his shoulders. Okay, so that's hard work, like carrying the sheep, because a sheep that lays down won't budge. You've got to carry it all the way home. And isn't that just like Jesus? Isn't that just like Jesus? And Jesus is saying here, I'm not ashamed. I'm not ashamed to do the work of a lowly shepherd. It's not beneath me to take off my royal robes and stomp through the mud. And then when he brings the sheep home, he doesn't complain about it. He throws a party. Rejoice with me, he says, and celebrate. I have found my lost sheep. So what kind of God is God? Well, he's that kind of God. So yes, Jesus says, I will do the dirty work, and no, I won't despise it, and yes, I will receive sinners and outsiders and eat with them as valuable people, as friends. And then Pharisees and scribes, I know that confuses you, bothers you, and even angers you. But you know what confuses and bothers and angers me? That you don't. You don't. Because there is more joy in heaven, Jesus says, over 1 sinner who repents, who turns, who comes home, than over 99 who don't need to or think they don't. See, Hope Family, hear me. The reason religious people like this don't get grace is because they don't think they need it. And it's easy to get real big on that, and then I stop and reflect and go, you know what, sometimes, honestly, that's me sometimes, because I can forget. We who have followed Jesus for a while, oftentimes, maybe even those of us especially who have a lot of Bible knowledge or have heard a lot of teaching, it's so weird how we can easily get to this place where we forget and we start getting divisive over differences in how we read Scripture and how things need to be done and how it's supposed to happen in church and all this stuff. We so easily get lost in judgment and lost in religion and lost in fear. And when we do that, we become unwilling and unable to maybe even consider what God might be doing around us, and maybe some of the stuff that's happening around us, instead of us getting uptight about all the the rules and religious pieces of this, maybe God's actually wanting to use that thing to shape and heal our hearts. If we just move toward it instead of pushing it away, for us to just wonder what God might be up to. But sadly, some people, I've seen this happen over and over, people get really mad. People go, oh, there's too much grace at this place, you know. Y'all are soft on sin, and that's dangerous. You should know better. And I hear that every once in a while. And I always want to say to those folks, and I ask God for permission to say or not to say, and I try to listen instead of just being mad back. But when that happens, I just want to go, hey, whoa, listen. Whatever you think, we don't have to agree on it, but just be careful, because you're starting to sound like the people that Jesus confronted. When you get mad about all the stuff and all the people out there and all the offense you can take and how we need to just stand on our convictions and teach everybody about sin and judge and call them, you get doing that, and boy, it sounds a lot like the people that Jesus actually confronted. Not because their theology was necessarily all off base, but their heart was, so their theology didn't matter, did it? So Jesus teaches this about the lost sheep. He's kind of flying through, and actually I kind of wonder, he probably doesn't even take a breath, and he moves to this next story and says, or suppose a woman has 10 silver coins and loses one. And now everybody that was hearing this knew this isn't spare change. This is probably this lady's life savings. It might have been part of her dowry, maybe even her wedding jewelry, and losing one coin out of the 10 would have been devastating. So Jesus asks, what woman among you wouldn't do this? By the way, a little side note here. Right here in this story, Jesus makes a woman the hero of the story, and he does it in front of these Pharisees whose culture just dismisses women as having any influence or anything important. They just disregarded women, and Jesus makes an extra push, an extra poke at them, because in this story, Jesus honors women, which would have been radical, making a woman a hero of the story in front of these, a religious elite. He honors women, and just side note, that's pretty radical, and it makes a point, just saying. But this woman, Jesus tells a story about, she is relentless, right? Her lamp is lit. She's burning costly oil. She got the broom out, swept every corner until she finds the coin. And again, same theme, joy. Twice Jesus says it. Joy when she finds it. And then when she calls her neighbors, she says, good news, rejoice with me. I found my coin. Now imagine, if you're just you and me in the room, we're like, yeah, that's awesome. What a cool, encouraging, wonderful story. Way to go, Jesus. Let's hear the next story. But the Pharisees in the room would not have had that reaction. Again, they hear how Jesus is confronting them, especially as he says, what woman among you? Like, they're like, a woman? Seriously? They had little respect for women, so there would not be a woman among them. Not in public, not in their group, not in their leadership club. And plus, these guys, all these religious, they were wealthy. And so when it comes to one coin, whatever, big deal, it wouldn't really faze them. And so a peasant woman's desperate search really is beneath their notice. But Jesus' point here is, hey, that's what God is like. That's what God is like. He notices. So what kind of God is God? He's like a royal shepherd who takes off his robes and stomps through the mud after one stubborn lamb. That kind of work is not beneath him. And he's the kind of God who's like a relentless woman who moves heaven and earth to discover something or someone that everyone else overlooks. Maybe Jesus is saying here, guys, that's why I accept sinners, that's why I befriend outsiders, that's why I eat with them and treat them as valuable. And Pharisees, I know this confuses you, I know this bothers you, I know it angers you, but what confuses and bothers and angers me is that you don't. You don't value the lost. You don't value women. You don't rejoice when the lost are found. You don't love imperfect people. So I know you're all the religious experts, but don't tell me that you know God, because you look nothing like the heart of God. Still think these are just cute little bedtime stories alone? No. Little side note on this, between sheep and coins. When a sheep gets lost, you know, it's not usually rebellion, like I hate you. That was my one leftover sheep noise. Troy told me not to do it. He's shaking his head. Don't do it. Actually, I was going to start the service and have a sheep calling contest and make Troy lead us in it, but he looks very relaxed today, so you're off the hook. But back to where we were. When sheep get lost, they're not like, you know, rebelling, right? Now, the younger son in the third story that we'll get to eventually, he's a little bit like that. And interesting to note, and we'll talk about it then, the father in that story doesn't chase him. He lets him go. But sheep just wander. Sheep get distracted. You know, they pick up the scent of something that smells good, and it's like, oh, I'm going to go over there, right? That kind of sounds like you and me, doesn't it? Just kind of wander. I mean, I know for me, it's not usually like, oh man, I'm so mad at God, like I'm out of here, right? It's like, no. Ugh, I never mean to leave God. I love God, but oh wait, well that smells good. Just turn our heads and shoo, we can wander off. We talked about that in our small group this last week, because that's how we get lost sometimes. Take a path you didn't mean to take. You go the wrong direction, don't even realize it until one day you look up and you realize and think, how did I get here? This isn't where I want to be. This isn't how I want to live. And if you today kind of identify with the lost sheep, if you're wondering, how did I get here to wherever you are in your life right now? And you're wondering, how do I get home? I've got good news. You've come to the right place, and we would love to help. We'd love to pray with you, and we're glad that you're here. So that's the sheep. That's how they get lost. But now think about the coin. I mean, maybe the sheep got distracted, but listen, I know this is weird. The coin, literally, the coin has no choice at all. The coin is not responsible. It just got lost. And I wonder sometimes if that's true for some people as well. See, the coin, it just fell through the cracks. And if someone doesn't get sweeping, if someone doesn't get looking, if someone doesn't start searching carefully, then this coin might never get found. Because unlike the sheep, you know, shepherd goes out the field looking for the sheep at least can make noise, and, you know, somebody give a sheep noise for me. Come on, first service did it. There we go, right there. There's the sheep, right? I know, you can find the sheep. Oh, the sheep can make, oh, there you are, right? There you are. That's with the sheep, right? But with coins, can't make a sound. Coin just sits there. Coin never rejected God. It has no concept of God. And so I think about lost coins, and I picture these lost coins as the least of these that Jesus talked about in Matthew 25, the forgotten, the overlooked, outsiders that our culture treats like they're just disposable. By the way, two words that don't belong together, disposable people. No such thing. And in Jesus' day, they were the lepers, the sinners, the prostitutes, the tax collectors. They were just pushed aside by the religious elite, like, hey, get out of the way. But Jesus? No, Jesus touched them, saw them, noticed them, embraced them. So I wonder even just, who are the lost coins today? Who are the lost coins around us in our day? One of the first things I think about is people with developmental delays or intellectual disabilities. Some of them have very little capacity to understand faith or understand God, and they just kind of fall through the cracks. I think of for a while when I was in Minnesota for a season, I had a job where I was I worked with developmentally delayed adults, and so it was kind of fun, actually. I get to take them out grocery shopping and just, you know, doing different events and things with them. And they'd give me a file. And Bruce was one of my favorite guys. Bruce was a trip. And it said that, I think it said he was had about a third grade level of kind of understanding. And so I was like, great, what would a third grader want to do for fun? We would do it. We'd just play. And it was wonderful. But then when he would ask questions about God, this was a challenge for me. Like, I'm trained and all this. I had to think, okay, what would make sense to a third grader? And how much could he even understand when he asked questions? Bruce was kind of like a lost coin. And other examples of lost coins might be today people living with addiction, neighbors without housing, folks battling depression, people in prison, I think of teenagers with no safe adult to talk to. And then I pan out a little bit and think about the global tragedies around us. There's so many, the famine in Gaza, starving people, just disregarded. I think of refugees from Afghanistan, Syria, Ukraine, and so many other places. These are, friends, these are, I think it's what Jesus is talking about. These are the lost coins. They're not mad at God. In fact, many of them don't even have a clear concept of God. And seeing that here and around our world kind of makes you want to pick up a broom, doesn't it? Makes you want to pick up a broom. So what kind of God is God? Jesus says the God is like a relentless woman with a broom touching the untouchable, sweeping every corner, searching carefully for lost and broken people. And I know I'm reading between the lines here, but he's saying also, and I know it confuses and bothers and angers you Pharisees and scribes, but I gotta tell you, what confuses and bothers and angers me is that you don't. Thinking about this and remembered it's well over 20 years ago, my pastor, Dave Johnson, who comes and visits every March and spends time with us here, he lives up in Minnesota. But I remember way back, at least 20 years ago, Dave talked about a guy named Clarence Jordan. He wrote the Cotton Patch Gospels back in the 60s, and he preached in the South. I mean, he looked like a farmer. He would preach right there in overalls, which was very different for the Southern kind of culture he was in. There was an intense racial turmoil that he was speaking into, and Clarence Jordan preached the grace of God and the heart of Jesus into it. Just the culture was so legalistic and churchy, and he described the kingdom of God unlike most preachers were doing at the time. And when Clarence preached on this parable, the lost coin and this woman, he just went off. And in his thick Southern drawl, he asked, and I'm gonna try it, all right? What does she do? She gets a broom. She sweeps and she sweeps and sweeps. She lights a lamp. She sweeps until what? Until she wore the broom out? Nope. Until the lamp went out? Nope. How long did she sweep? Until she found it. And how long was that? As long as necessary. And I remember hearing that, and I was just, yes, I love that. Everything in me shouts, yes. And I'm like, let's go find a broom, because it's time to go sweeping. And I'm pumped up, and then Jordan pushes it a little further, and he asks his listeners to wonder, and what if God keeps on sweeping until he finds it? And what if God keeps on sweeping and even after death? And Dave said, like, my same reaction. We're like, woo, before I can, like, dismiss that, because that doesn't really fit into my, neatly into my theology. Before I could push it away, though, I started thinking about lost little ones, about lost coins, picturing, you know, those haunting images we've all seen, starving children in Sudan, flies crawling on their faces, blank stares in their eyes, mom sitting next to them desperately, not knowing what to do. Children who may never hear the name of Jesus. Lost coins. And Jordan here, he's inviting us just to imagine, what if when they die, the first thing they see is someone like this relentless woman sweeping the floor, looking for them. And when she sees them, just imagine her shouting for joy, there you are, I've been looking for you, welcome home. And she calls her friends and says, come rejoice with me, she's home, he's home, look who I found right here. Now, hear me, I'm not trying to build a theology around this or asking us to, like, debate this. I'm just inviting us to wonder. I mean, Troy and I were talking, and he pointed out something a friend of ours pointed out. He said, listen, Jesus conquered death, hell, and the grave, so could there be more going on than we grasp? Maybe. Maybe not. And either way, just wonder with me, what if? What if? And as I was wondering about this, I was on the phone with Dave Johnson, my pastor, on Thursday night, and he told me about preaching this parable in a very conservative Baptist church in Ireland. Dave's got, I don't know if that's wisdom or, I don't know what that is. He's got guts, that's what he's got. And he asked them to wonder, like, hey, you know, maybe, you never know, and what if? And he got done, he wasn't sure how it went, he wasn't sure how it landed, and right as soon as he was done, an elder came up to him, and he said, hey, Dave, there's this missionary woman from Afghanistan that here, and she wants to talk with you. And Dave at first wondered, like, uh-oh, am I in trouble with the Baptist for just wondering? I'm really grateful, by the way, that we don't have to worry about that here at Hope. But this woman was not there to criticize him. She was a missionary home on leave. She was deeply broken with PTSD. So traumatized. And through tears, Dave said that she told him, I served in prisons. They were filled with young girls, and I worked with these young girls. And they were there not because they committed crimes, but because they were raped and dared to speak out. See, the Taliban and culture around there believed that speaking out for them to try to get it to stop, that that actually brought shame on their families. And so the Taliban put the girls in prison. She said, I love those girls, but I knew I couldn't tell them specifically about Jesus, because if they received Jesus, then they would be killed. And then I would be killed or deported or imprisoned. And now I live with this ache, because all I could think of is that they were doomed, and that really everything I did to try to love and serve and care for them, in the end, it really didn't matter in eternity. Then, he said, she broke down weeping. She said to Dave, what if God really is like you wondered? What if he's like that woman who won't stop sweeping? Because if there's even a chance that it's true, it changes everything. So what kind of God is God? Now, listen, I don't know how it will be. I'm not claiming that I do. But hear me now. If it was like that, if that's what God was like, is like. Let me ask you a question. Would you rejoice or would you grumble? Would you rejoice, would you grumble? That's bad theology. That's not how it works. That's not. Okay, what? Push that aside for a minute. Would you rejoice or would you grumble? Because your response to that tells you something. Would you rejoice? Would you grumble? Tells you something, and it leads to our question that we regularly ask around here. Where do you see yourself in this story? Where do you see yourself in this story? In these stories, even? Like, you hear these stories and go, oh, the lost sheep, that's me, yep. Maybe that's you. Are you the lost sheep? You don't hate God, but you know you've wandered, you've chased off after something that smelled good, and you're going, I don't know how to get home. Hear me, listen. God is not angry with you. He's looking for you. He's looking for you. If I can give just a little advice, if that's you today, make a little noise. Translate, cry out to God, right? Here I am, God. Here I am. Make a little noise. Cry out to God today. Let one of us pray with you and help you find a way back home. Maybe you're the sheep in the story. Maybe you see yourself and you go, are you the Pharisee? That's the question. Are you the Pharisee? Or maybe even kind of find yourself leaning that way, skeptical, grumbling. I mean, honestly, folks like that rarely stay here very long. But if you even notice a little bit of that in your heart, I just want to say to you, not to scold you, I want to say this with kindness. If you're the Pharisee in the story, the lost Pharisee, listen, you don't have to be that way. That is not the heart God placed in you when you came to follow Jesus. You don't have to be that way. In fact, why don't you come and join us and pick up a broom, which is where many of you are in this story. We have a lot of folks like that here in our Hope family, because you find yourself in the story and you're going, yeah, that's me. Your heart is responding, I want to pick up a broom. I want to start sweeping and finding. I want to spend the rest of my life going after lost coins, because if we don't go looking, they won't be found. See, friends, I believe that's why we're here. The local church is meant to be a community of sweepers, seeking those who've fallen through the cracks, the least and the lost, the tired, the broken, the not good enough, inviting outsiders to become a part of this grace-based family where anyone can find and follow Jesus and do it together. See, that's why we gather. It's why we love our kids and teach them about Jesus. It's why we invest in our teens. In fact, more than half of our students come from homes where their parents don't attend church anywhere. That's sweeping, friends. That's sweeping. Worship team, will you come? I mean, our worship team. This is why our worship team leads us. They're sweeping. It's why our tech team and our greeter team and our coffee teams and all of our heroic landscaping teams do what they do. It's a part of sweeping. Like our elders, our leadership team, they're sweeping. And sometimes, I'll be honest, sometimes we forget and we get a little tired or maybe a little grumpy or we get exhausted by people who just kind of criticize and really have no idea. But then when we stop and remember this right here, oh, that's right. This is part of it. We're sweeping. I mean, we sweep at San Marcos Elementary School where we support teachers and families and students. Some of us sweep at Matthew's Crossing Food Bank, and our church does food drives as a part of helping sweep there, and we sweep in refugee advocacy. We sweep at the Naomi House on the Navajo Nation with foster kids. We sweep with One Mission when we build homes in Mexico. And friends, we really are sweeping when we listen to one another. when we carry each other's burdens and offer a place to belong in our small groups, friends, we sweep wherever God points and we follow. And why would we bother sweeping and doing that? Oh, well, it's because we have a God like this. Like we heard today, God is like a lowly shepherd who takes off his royal robes and wades into the mud and carries us home. That kind of work is not beneath our God. And we have the kind of God who is like a relentless woman who just won't stop sweeping, who refuses to give up the search for those who fell through the cracks. That is our God. And don't you want to follow Jesus into that? Not to just be admirers or name badge wearers of Jesus or Christian, no, but to be followers of Jesus, offering his love, his grace to everyone. Well, I know the heart of so many of you here, and I know that the answer to that, because I've seen it over and over, the answer to that is yes. I know the answer is yes. So here we go. As we get ready to respond and sing in a moment, the big question is this. So where is God asking you to sweep? Where and who? In fact, let's do what we sometimes do. We're going to pause and take a moment here. Just listen for God to speak. God, I pray you would speak. We are listening. God, what do you want us to know about where you are asking each one of us to sweep? Where are you asking me to sweep? Where and who? What do you want me to know about that, God? Just pause and listen. See what he lays on your heart. And now let's ask the second part of that question. God, what do you want me to know? Now let's ask, God, what do you want me to do about what you just laid on my heart? What do you want me to do about that? Just pause, see where he invites you. Friends, today, if you hear God nudging, speaking, tapping, putting something on your heart, just say yes to him and follow him into it. Just follow him into it. He will be with you. Prayer team, will you come up front? And I want y'all to know that as we sing in a moment, any of you are welcome to come to the front. Maybe you're someone that just needs somebody to stand with you as a lost sheep, or maybe you're a sweeper and you're asking God to show you where the next place is to sweep, and you want somebody to stand with you and pray with you. Our prayer team would love to stand with you and listen with you that way. Will you stand? I'm going to pray over us, and then we can sing. God, I am grateful that you are like a waiting father and a humble shepherd, and like a relentless woman who just won't give up on your lost creation. Would you help us, God, to be a part of what you're doing in this world, that we would become like lowly shepherds and sweeping women and men and patient fathers and mothers who join you in your search. God, show us exactly how you are inviting us to do that here in our neighborhoods, in our cities, in our world, how you're inviting us to be sweepers, sweepers with Jesus. How long will we sweep? Until the broom wears out? No. Until the lamp goes out? No. How long will we sweep? Until we have found them. And how long will that be? As long as necessary. Amen. Let's sing together.